Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 85 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make theater happen. You can find all of our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other fine podcast streaming services, so go back through the library and fill those boots. And if you have a spare 30 seconds, please rate and review the podcast to help us be more discoverable to listeners who haven't heard about us. And now for this week's podcast. I went to go see a show, as they say in the business, and that show was Building the Wall at the Park Theater. Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Robert Schenken's hard-hitting play, Imagine a World Where, after a terrorist attack set in the very near future, President Trump imposes martial law with all immigrants, legal or otherwise, and rounds them up and puts them into internment camps. The play, directed by Jez Bond, starts the morning after the days before, the audience observing two characters on stage in a hermetically sealed glass box, representing an interview room. Now, it's not even representing, it's there on stage for you. The fantastic Angela Griffin, you know, from the telly box, plays Gloria. She's a historian and college professor trying to get to the bottom of this horrific crime, the crime of the century, with details drip-fed to the audience over a brutal 80 minutes. It's a crime that's perpetrated by Rick, a middle-aged, bitter and angry prisoner who believes, well, he's the bullhorn heroic voice of the unheard masses that voted for Trump. And it was played subtly and brilliantly by Trevor White. This play is exactly the kind of play that I love to watch. Vital, current, engaging, one that definitely needed to be written and put on. Now, I got to speak to Angela and Trevor about their thoughts on the play at the Park Theater, performing in front of major theater stars, the immediacy of this new piece, and what keeps them both coming back to the theater and getting on stage. Have a listen.
I'm Trevor White.
Yeah,
I can possess
that,
I think.
Yeah, own it.
Yeah, 47 years, good. Probably shouldn't let that out either. It's too late now. Anyway, I play Rick in Building the Wall, played by Robert Schenken, with
Angela Griffin, who is playing Gloria White in the play Building the Wall at the Park Theatre.
Nice. Now, so I'm going to preface, we said this before I recorded, but I haven't seen this yet. Mm. Normally what I do is I see a play and then we come back and discuss it afterwards. So I'm absolutely coming to this knowing nothing. Let's just get out and talk. What is the play about? What is the general conceit and like the setting and you know, just the base of this play? You know, in a nutshell. You don't have to give me an elevator pitch. Go in as much detail as you want. tell me about the play.
Well, we're actually sitting in the theater right now, which of course our listeners wouldn't have known, but we are in the theater now, the Park 200, which is an amazing space. And one of the crazy things about it, I've never played this space before until now. I've seen shows here before. It's a bit like the Donmar in that it's a thrust space and it's really intimate. We've actually got a massive glass box on stage in front of us, which is an interview room in a prison, which is where the entire play takes place between Gloria and Rick, the character Angela plays and myself. It's just the two of us.
I'll do the soundtrack.
So in fact, both of us, as I can see, are still wearing our mics from this afternoon's matinee because it's a bit of a faff bringing them, getting the mics in and out.
So of course, we can't. That's like a hermetically sealed box.
Pretty much.
Okay.
So there actually is. I don't know if you saw Yerma. Yerma was a brilliant show. Also in kind of glass encased. You know,
and that follows the father was very much. I don't know if you saw the father at the Young Vic was also
really cool.
In a box.
And it's very much justified by the fact that Gloria, Angela's character, is actually recording the session for, well, not just posterity, for professional reasons as a historian, because she's interviewing Rick, a prisoner in the near future in America, about the crime of the century, as we're calling it. Now, we can't tell you too much about that because anyone would want to come and see the show, but I'll hand it over to Angela to continue.
The crime of the century occurred not long after Trump won the presidency. He issued a few executive orders, and because of these actions, there was a reaction, which involved Rick. It's really hard. We can't say anything about it, but I think the most important thing is that Rick is not your average run-of-the-mill criminal. Mm. He's not the kind of person who you necessarily would expect to see in the orange garb that he's adorned in during this play. He's an ordinary guy from a relatively ordinary background who has done something that's quite extraordinary.
Okay.
And this play deals with how that occurs. How does that happen? How does the ordinary turn into the extraordinary? What are the points? Where are the changes? And Gloria is very interested in understanding Rick. That's what she's there for. She just needs to understand why he did what he did.
Yeah.
And the audience are taken on quite a thrilling ride, because it takes the full 80 minutes to discover what he's
done. Down to the last word, I think it's fair to say. It's a sort of drip feed of a horror that's revealed over the course of the evening, and lots of twists and turns within that. But exactly as Angela said, it is about trying to understand. And I think it really resonates. Well, it's been done all over the world. In fact, Robert Schenken, the playwright, who's Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, was here the week before last talking about the show. It's been done in Iran and Austria and all over the States. It's about to be done in Manchester. It's a show that really resonates, I think, particularly with the rise of right-wing fascists, you can call it what you will, governments in so many places around the world, where there is a very slippery slope. And I think, in fact, interestingly, Robert Schenken, the playwright, wrote it before Trump was even elected. No one, of course, thought he would be.
Yeah.
You probably cast a ballot from abroad.
I did.
You did your best.
I sure did. But I got called up for jury service very soon afterwards.
Did
that's
you?
Interesting.
America?
Yeah, sometimes it happens.
Oh, wow.
You're, tell them you're away.
So yeah, it's we don't have to look much farther than the Windrush scandal here, and how UKIP and the rise of Brexit and all this kind of thing has shifted the dynamic in this country massively within the last couple 3 years.
Yeah.
Obviously Trump in America, far right wing governments in Austria and Hungary and abroad.
Yeah, and nearly France, you know,
and nearly France.
So I mean, can I jump in and say, you know what? I know it's to say how lucky we are. I mean, but with the, it's because we're not lucky. I don't think I'm going to put politics on. I don't think we're in a lucky position at all. Like, I think it's the most divisive time I can ever remember. Mm. But the fact that people are aware of what's happening now means that they bring to the play when they're sitting in the audience a bit of knowledge, a bit of already how they might feel about something. So it's a smart audience. I mean, you have to live under a rock to kind of have, from what I can tell, from what you've described the play as, you know, like you just said, I didn't believe for a moment that Trump would get in.
That's kind of the point of it, is it? Everyone's kind of sat around thinking, oh, you know, black president, lots of liberal thinking, we're all right, we can all sit on our laurels, and, you know, because the right thing is always going to get done. And I think worldwide there's been a massive shock that actually there's a lot of people who feel sidelined, who aren't in our position, and they spoke with their votes, and it's very easy to dismiss those people and go, they're stupid, they're right wing, they're uneducated, they're this, they're that. This play deals with the fact that those people alone could not cause Brexit. They couldn't Trump into the White House. There's a lot of people who we underestimated, and it's my favourite thing about this play is that I find myself sympathising with what should be an unsympathetic person.
Sure. I love the fact that it's a two-hander, not knowing anything about it, because you have to, as an audience member, you have to kind of go, okay, who am I with, very quickly.
Take a side, yeah.
Take a side. You have to. Like, who are you with? Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to it.
And it's very well written. It's really well written, because it's so balanced. It's, you know, you're not going to come in here and have your liberal left wing ego stroked.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in there where you do kind of go, oh, actually, I understand. Mm. Oh, no, I understand that. What would I have done in that position?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's really cleverly. I mean, Robert, the writer, is very much a liberal thinking individual. I think he would in life side much more with Gloria's character. But what he's cleverly not done is created a monster on one side and someone who is just sort of a kind, understanding person on the other, going, "Oh boy, so this that and the other thing happened," and just sort of flogging a dead horse. This is someone who is a human being who was in a very, very difficult situation and was absolutely complicit in some horrific things that happened and decisions that were made, and could have, should have, no doubt, walked away. But it's a lot more uncomfortable than I think both that character of Rick and the audience would like. And I think there was even, it was extraordinary, I was just saying to Angela early today, there was a gala night the other night, a young guy came over and said, I really enjoyed the show. Enjoy, maybe not the right word, but yeah. I'm Jewish, and he said, for the first time ever in my life, could I have possibly understood how the Nazis did what they did? And that was a bit of a,
wow.
Like, whoa, that was quite a strong thing to hear, and really an interesting and unexpected thing to hear from someone who clearly wasn't alive when that was going on, but that's a massive part of his religious heritage and who he is, how he identifies as a person. To be able to kind of, I wouldn't say forgive, but to at least understand the possibility of how normal people could be involved in terrible things was quite powerful, and I think this play really captures that, and it's meant to shock and unsettle. It's meant to really provoke. And
nobody leaves this auditorium and goes, "All right, that was good. So, what we're going to go and do for our team?" There is a dialogue that I mean, it happens. We can see it as we look out. There is a dialogue that immediately happens the second the lights have gone down.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you think. It makes you question. And for me personally, that's why I want to go to the theatre.
Yeah,
I want to come out thinking
and feel as well. Yeah. I think that's another thing.
We'll definitely get to why we do theatre, like what brings us back. I'd quickly like to visit. Did Robert change the play at all? Because if he started writing it before, Trump had taken office, was there any? I mean, it's obviously been in other places. Was there any change for the UK?
He made minor changes for our... I mean, there was a couple little things I thought we could do to make it a little harder for them, the two characters, to find an agreement, if you will, to come to an agreement at the beginning of the play. And a little joke. It's just like small things I thought might be worth
Trevor White doing a joke.
There is incredibly a fair bit of humor at the beginning anyway. It certainly doesn't end that way. But and my understanding is he did make some changes as things in real life progressed, obviously. Yeah. But kind of incredible that he wrote this apparently in about a week and a half or something.
4 days.
In a kind of,
my Lord.
Just a flurry of like, I've got to, this is my thing. I write plays, I write screenplays. This is my way to respond to this. I need to respond to this. Yeah. Art has a responsibility to respond, and he did that, and it's been done in all the major cities in America. It's continuing to be produced. I think it's been produced dozens of times around the world. So it's kind of amazing, because it's now, but the themes in it are clearly, because of some of the things it harkens back to, are universal and eternal. Sadly, a lot of the atrocities and things that are described and things that are revealed in the course of the play have happened before, and probably, sadly, horrifically, will happen again. And that's what it is. It's a warning. It's a cautionary tale of how decent people not only can be involved, but allow things to be to happen from the outside.
Plausible deniability is an amazing thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's technically, there's a box on stage, and you guys are physically withheld from exploring too much. Mm. So, in the rehearsal process, I know, blocking is important, everything else, but did the limited amount of space to explore mean that you had the opportunity to get deeper into the characters, or or was it really tricky because you had such limited space to kind of go, how do we keep this moving? I know it's only, I say only 80 minutes. That is a long
enough
time to keep people's, especially when you are confined. But, how was that process? I mean, finding the limited movement, but then making sure that the characters came out of that sealed glass box.
I've never had such a challenging technical transition, I suppose, from... Because we weren't rehearsing in a box as such.
Right.
We were just in a room with lines, taped to the floor. So going into glass, which firstly cuts you off, you know, you can't hear the audience. I mean, it's like being underwater. You can hear like a little murmur, but that's it. Seeing your own reflection in multiple directions, and I'm wearing an orange jumpsuit. That does not help. The echo in there is like, because it's very spare.
The sound, for me, was the most difficult thing, I've got to say.
And we found out pretty early on to just strip that back a little. There's obviously moments where it isn't, but you can really be almost filmic in there. You can really pull it, and there's moments where we're almost whispering, where we are whispering to each other. And that's fine, because the audience can hear every, you know, we're mic'd very cleverly in a way that you can hear every syllable. So it's...
And every breath.
Every breath. It's so really, good. That was a really challenging transition for me personally. I'm sure you found similar challenges yourself. And it's also weird being cut off from the audience, because that's part of what theater is. But from the outside, all the feedback has been that what's really unique and interesting is that people really lean in, physically actually, I think lean in, like, and everyone's even more quiet and respectful of the space, because they realize if there's a bit too much murmuring out here, you won't really follow in the same way inside. So it's like everyone's eavesdropping in on this very private occasion, which is deeply uncomfortable, and it feels quite, what's the word I'm looking for, voyeuristic almost.
Yeah.
There is, in fact, as you can see, a sort of a one-way mirror at the back of the set. Someone is, I think you were saying, that people feel on the outside like they are actually watching this experience through this one-way mirror.
What's amazing is that they get, like, the reflections are quite distracting for us. But for the audience, they're brilliant.
Yeah.
Because we can go all the way up to the back and they can see us. They can see, nowhere for us to hide, which is great. But I worked out that, see, I never see me in the reflection. I don't know, maybe it's because I'm not in orange. So I never get distracted by me. But what I've got to really focus on is not looking at you in your reflection.
Camera two.
Because sometimes you'll do something and all I have to do is do that and I can see the front of your face and it's like, oh, no, must feel like these are blank walls. That's where my distraction comes from, of having to not look like
the mirror that isn't there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I found the sound difficult coming in. We actually did, just before we came into tech, our very lovely director, Jez Bond, gave us a little immersive rehearsal day, which was amazing. So we had spent all this time in a rehearsal room with tape on the floor. And, you know, of course, you're using your imagination to what would it be like when we're enclosed and we can't get out? And one day, at the end of rehearsal, Jez gave me and Trevor a letter and said, see you at work tomorrow. And we both went home, opened our letter, and we had a different set of instructions on our letters. And I was told to go to a different address that wasn't our rehearsal room.
Right.
Trevor was told that someone was going to come in.
Basically kidnapped from my house by quote-unquote government people, federal agents, whatever. They kindly allowed me to go to the bathroom because I was just about to do that when the nanny had showed up and I was holding my five-month-old daughter. I didn't really want to, even though she's 5 months and probably wouldn't remember, I didn't want to be blindfolded and handcuffed in front of her. So
that shit could stick, man.
Yeah. I said, let's do that outside, shall we? Interestingly, someone pulled up in their car. I don't know who. I was blindfolded as I was being frog marched down the road and didn't even say anything.
Yeah.
Plainclothes guys doing Texas accents. Anyway, it was all... And then I got taken to the same house where Angela was already being frisked down.
Yeah, and I pulled up and a car came, pulled up, and I just saw my work colleague being taken out of the back of a car, handcuffed, blindfolded, and taken into this house. And we were taken through what potentially could have happened to us before before the room begins. And it was about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then finally I went up to the room, opened the door, and with no director, nobody in there, it was for us only, in a small room with the same table, chair, water cooler, we then did the play. And it was one of the most useful things because it changes everything. It changes having four closed-in walls, having gone through that, having been frisked, having been searched, having been spoken to in a tone of voice that you don't normally talk to actors in.
Please.
Depends on the director.
Well,
yeah.
That's true. Yeah,
that's true. Not anymore. Not anymore. Right. No more. So that was really helpful, actually, when we did come into the space and come into the tech that we that
really
we've gone
simplified
through that.
It right, yeah. Focused it, and it simplified it. Yeah. Which I think then we found certain things was good to, you know, because there actually is an audience out here. We can't forget that. Yeah. But it was really the connection and this, yeah, just the simplicity really of it, of that experience being in this very contained space. Also, the awareness that we kind of knew that there were people and they were making little sounds on the floorboards outside. There's various bits of the show where I'm revealing even more sort of dynamite information that I'm worried that at any moment someone's going to come in and shut me down or worse. So that kind of tension of those moments was really heightened, actually, and it was really interesting, wasn't it?
Well
and
done,
a lot of fun. It was like our
well
own little punch
Jez.
Drunk show.
Well done, Jez. So you know, you guys, we all do telly, we all do radio and bits and pieces, and you know, but what? I mean, it's a silly question, but you know, I can hear the enthusiasm in your voice when speaking about this piece, and I find that every play I do makes me grow in some way, you know, and I just take something with me that stays with me for the rest of my life. But I mean, I do theater, like you said, to, you know, because I do theater because I have to, not because I want to. I've got to engage. I've got to do something that I get my teeth in. What is it that brings you back to theater? That, you know, because we don't need to do it.
I do it for the money.
She's the only one.
We'll talk about your contract, Angela, after Trevor's gone to the
other than Nathan
room.
Lane. She's the two of them do it for the money. Definitely not the money. Well, but you, I mean, interestingly, because I've always done a little bit of this, a little bit of that all my life, but you came to theatre later, but have done quite a lot of it lately.
So. I did it, when I first started acting, it was all theatre, so up until being 16, that was my...
Oh, right,
that's why I became an actor, because I was part of a children's theatre group with youth theatre, but then I got a job on the telly, and then, luckily, unluckily, I don't know what, but I just got trapped in the world of telly, and so it went from job to job to job, which... then meant that theatre people didn't necessarily look at me in the same way anymore. So it took me quite a lot, quite a few years to break into theatre, and it really wasn't for want of trying. And then it was a big 15-month time out of work. No work was coming in. And then One Man, Two Governors, I went into a recast of that. And then all of a sudden people went, oh, actually, she can do theatre. Oh, okay, then. So this is, so this is my fifth play.
Oh, amazing.
In 5 years, I think it is.
Why do they put us in a box? Listen, it's something they do.
Literally, why do they put us in a box? Well, apparently it is because...
I did not mean that was
the really helps the experience. They massively do it.
On Broadway, it's slightly different in New York. They kind of do their seasons around people going to pilot season and filming their telly, and then they come back and they do their theater. It is a coast-to-coast thing. Here, I find it here that they... You know, when I directed a play a couple years ago in town, and when I came back to it, or and when I produced The Hide, you know, I produced a film, and everyone thought that was me done.
Right, that's who he is. Yeah, that's
and
who
so,
he is.
So, John's producing now. He's not. It's like, well, I only produce a film.
Yeah.
Like, you know, or I've only directed a play. The actor is still here.
That's a good
bit of a moan. Sorry.
Yeah. No.
But it's true. But they do. They like to put you in a box. Yeah. They love to put you in a box. And sometimes that box is great. And being in a telly box for a while was, you know, lovely, lucrative.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, for me now, going back to the original question, I do it for a million reasons. But one is, I wouldn't get this job on telly. I wouldn't, if someone was going, right, okay, we're casting a black, American historian, educated academic, my name would not come up at all. I'm Anthony Griffin, I'm down to earth, I'm northern, I've never done a telly job in another accent other than my own. They just, you know, people can't necessarily see past that. Whereas in theatre, I think you are allowed out of your box.
Yeah,
A little bit
That's
more,
such
and
a
so
good point.
I'm playing a character here that I wouldn't normally. Mm. I do love it. I love it. I love the thrill, but I do. I hate it at the same time because I get really scared.
Yeah,
and I'm already now going, oh god, right, oh god. got to run through my lines for some. And I do go, why am I doing it? But then when I'm not doing it, it's like, oh, I really just want to do a play. Just want to be in a rehearsal room. I want to talk about it. I want to get down to the layers of it. I want to do the detail as opposed to, you know, getting onto set and you've got three takes before the end of the day.
They're going,
exactly.
Lunch in 10 minutes.
But that's, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head in, well, various nails on various heads. I don't know how to put it. Anyway, lots of clever things you just said. But, I mean, that's it. What always appeals to me, no matter what the medium, is you read the script, you know, in this case, the play, and you go, oh, fuck, that's great. I'm allowed to swear? I just did. Anyway, you read it and you go, that's a story I would like to tell. That's the first and most important step. Everything else beyond that, I mean, of course, you might not get the part, for example. But anyway, in this case, that was easy. And then when I talked to Jez about the design and all those kind of things, I thought, well, it's... Those are things that augment the experience, and it's also unique. None of the productions prior to this one have used a box like this, and I thought it makes it more claustrophobic, it makes it more intimate, it makes it more, for the audience, that kind of aspect of peering into this horrible little secret experience. So all those things were great. Theater, I'm the same as Angela. Like, I've done lots of plays over many years, and certain nights don't. The first preview press nights. We even had this gala night early this week, you know. And I was specifically asked not to know who was in, because if I had known Imelda Staunton was in, if I had known Mark Gatiss was in, weirdly, those particular two people, because I really admire their work, I would have altered what I did. Or even when good friends and family come in, like, it's just a weird thing. I can't get beyond that somehow, even as much as I try.
I'm not going to put you off. I mean, I you know, no, I cannot watch it, Trev.
I think it's okay. I know there's people coming tonight.
The way, I didn't say that you could swear, because Angela's her reputation precedes her. I hear she's a potty mouth.
Really?
I'm joking.
I like how shocked you seem. My goodness me.
Never.
I said to someone earlier today, and one of the weirdest aspects of this, the actual staging in the box and all that, not really being able to hear, but you can see the audience, but you know, of course you can't because they're not really there, and all that sort of stuff. Not to share the room with them actually makes your ego want to know more about what they think of you outside, because you don't get anything. You don't really get the reactions. Even if it's a silence, you think, ooh, I've got them with that silence. Or even if you don't, you think you did. You don't get any of that. So I'm finding it even harder to just shut that out to the best of my ability and to concentrate on each other, which is really what the show is about. But that has been one of the biggest challenges, again, technically, of this whole process. I'm even saying the American way. There you go.
Well done, dude.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm proud of that or not.
Process.
So, yeah, it is about telling a good story, I think. And, you know, there's that thing of doing something that scares you every day, and this ticks that box automatically, so I can be a little slack in the rest of my life and not worry so much about other stuff, because you think, well, I can do this, and then I can, well, I'm raising a daughter. That's another thing that's fairly recent and important. But, you know, you see my point. It's like it fills the soul, I think, and that's why I do it ultimately.
And the money.
And the money. Thank you so much. You guys have a performance soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciate it. And good luck. Run. I think, when does it finish? Finishes on
June 2nd. Two and a half more weeks. Well, depending on when this goes out.
Well, this goes out on Tuesday.
Oh, great.
Cool.
And
a couple more weeks to come.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll let you. I don't do reviews. We don't do reviews, but I'll definitely let people
review.
Know what I thought.
I'll definitely.
All right, guys. Thank you
thank
so
you very
much.
Thank you.
The formidable duo of Angela Griffin and Trevor White, currently appearing in Building the Wall at the Park Theatre here in London. Now, before we wrap up, if you are a theatre professional, you need to head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. Just don't use the word password or four ones or 1234 or anything. Just be smart about it. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Curtain Call. And now we would love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast. If you want us to try and get to interview somebody, just let me know. Get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. It leaves me to say a huge thank you to Angela Griffin and Trevor White, along with the rest of the company. You have until the 2nd of June to catch it, and catch it you should, especially if you like new writing, unique theatrical experiences, and powerful stage acting. Grab a ticket by going to the Park Theater's website at parktheater.co.uk. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.